This morning's gospel brings us back to Holy Week. Remember, yesterday we read about Jesus cleansing the temple, overturning the tables of the money changers, driving out the animals, and telling the people, "Stop turning my Father's house into a den of thieves." Well, this gospel today is from the next day. Jesus comes back to the temple area, and this time the authorities, the chief priests, the scribes, the elders, approach him and ask him a question. Now, you notice they don't ask him, "Why did you do that?" Because he already told them why, and it makes them look bad. The reason why he did it is because his father's house should not be turned into a den of thieves. So instead of saying, "Why did you do that?" they ask this question: "By what authority are you doing these things? Who gave you this authority?" Now, the question of authority is, in their minds, safer. Because if they ask, "Why did you do it?" then he'll say, "Because wrong, this place is in disorder." But if they ask, "Who gave you authority?" well, then they think they have the upper hand, because they're the ones in authority over the temple, chief priests. They're the ones who have authority and can delegate authority, and they haven't chosen Jesus to have any responsibility in the temple. So they think they have him. Their understanding of authority, though, is limited to the human level. They're thinking we are the highest authority in the temple. Should be obvious to us that there is actually a higher authority in the temple, and that's the authority of God. It's God's house, not their house. So Jesus, in order to open their eyes to the fact that there is such a thing as an authority higher than them, makes this very clever and wise response. He says, "Okay, before I answer your question, I'm going to ask you a question." And then he asks about the baptism of John. John the Baptist did something very authoritative. He baptized people. Now, John, remember, was from the priestly class. He was the son of a priest. He had some authority, but he didn't exercise any authority in the temple. He went out into the desert. So he was a very puzzling figure to the chief priests. They probably knew his father. Zechariah was a well-known to the people in the temple. But John the Baptist was this weird character out in the desert doing these weird things, and all the people thought he was a prophet. But the chief priests, what do they think? So now the reason Jesus says, "What about John's baptism?" is because he says, "By what authority did he do that? Heavenly or human? Of heavenly origin or human origin?" So he introduces in this way the awareness that there is a higher level of authority than the chief priests are referring to. So he puts them on the spot. They think they have put him on the spot. He puts them on the spot, heavenly or earthly, heavenly or human. And they can't answer. They can't answer. Because if they say heavenly, well, then they have to acknowledge that there's an authority above them and that they didn't submit to that authority in relation to John's baptism. They didn't submit. But if they say of human origin, meaning he's lower than we are and he was an outsider, well, then they are afraid that the crowd will turn against them, because the crowd, with their basic common sense and their basic religious sense, recognized that John was a true prophet sent by the Lord. So they say to Jesus, "We don't know. We're not going to engage in this question of higher authority." That's what they're saying. We're not going to speak about that. So Jesus says, "Well, okay, if you're not going to talk about higher authority, then I'm not going to give you any answer." It's a very wise thing to do. If you're going to exclude from the conversation the very answer to the question you ask me, well, then there's no point in having a discussion. Now, he doesn't punch them or threaten to burn down their house or something. He doesn't do what people in controversy nowadays do. He didn't use foul language to oppose them. He just said, "If you're not going to be open to the premises on which this discussion is built, well, then there's no sense having a discussion." That's it. Very calm. I wish more people did that nowadays. Let's try to find out if we have a common ground. If we don't have any common ground, there's no sense even talking. Now, this question of authority is very relevant to the experience of today's saints. Saints Charles Lwanga and his 21 companions, the 22 martyrs of Uganda. These young men are extraordinary witnesses of Christian faith in Uganda in the 19th century. Now, think of Uganda. I don't even think it was called Uganda where they lived. It was a kingdom in what is now Uganda. Uganda is in East Africa, near what they call the Lake Region of East Africa. So they were under the authority of a king. King, what was his name? Wanga? Anyway, the king there was a traditional king. And with the authority of a king, meaning absolute authority. And most of these martyrs were pages or members of the royal court. Most of them were young men, not all were young. But in fact, I did some research into the story of these heroic martyrs a few years ago, and I can't remember all the details, but there's a lot of different men here, and they didn't all die at the same time, and they weren't all in the exact same position, but they were all dedicated to the faith. And they would not compromise their faith in order to submit to the human authority of the king. That's why I say it's related to this topic here. Whose authority? On whose authority do you do these things? Now, in the mind of the king, he's the top authority. Probably even in the religious sense. He wasn't a Christian. So in the traditional religions of that place and time, he probably had authority over the medicine men and the religious leaders. I don't remember. But the young men in his royal household were, some of them had converted to Christianity. Some were Catholics, some were Anglicans, some were catechumens. They had not yet been baptized, but they were attracted to the Christian faith. And this was a time when Christianity was just getting started in that region of Africa. You know that Christianity has exploded in that section of the world. Africa is by far the most rapidly growing sector of the church, by far. In fact, everyone acknowledges that the future of the church is Africa, because that's where all the members are. Where the church is collapsing in most Western countries, for sure in Europe, it's growing in Asia too. But it's exploding in Africa. And part of the reason is the great religious spirit of the people and the heroic missionaries that went to bring the faith. But another part is the witness of the Ugandans themselves. And these martyrs have become an inspiration for the waves and waves of conversions since that late 19th century. So this is over 100 years ago. Okay, so the question of authority. The king thinks he has absolute authority. These young men realize, well, yes, he's the king, but there is an authority higher than him, the authority of God. So when the king makes a demand that violates the law of God, they say no to the king. You know the demand, I think. It's the kind of thing we don't usually talk about, and I'm hesitant to get into it, but he was making sexual demands on his members. And so these young men said no, and this king was not accustomed to taking no for an answer, so he threatened them, he tortured them, and finally had them killed. In some of them, in the most brutal possible ways. So, authority. God's authority is higher than human authority. And when human authority violates the law of God, the right answer is no. No, I will not submit to what is evil. Now, it happens that Uganda has been in the news lately. Have you noticed this? Just this week, Uganda has been prominent in the international news. Again, I hesitate to get into this, but let's let the light of the gospel shine on the darkness and the confusion of the world. Uganda's in the news because the Ugandan government recently enacted what the secular media are calling the harshest anti-gay legislation in the world. Now, I don't know if it really is the harshest anti-gay legislation in the world. Maybe it is, but it's hard to get the truth from media now. Certainly, they passed some laws imposing civil punishments on certain behavior associated with homosexuality, yes. And to the enlightened Western world, that is like breaking the First Commandment. That is the worst thing you can possibly do, is to say anything against the LGBT agenda. That's why they're, the Ugandans now, the Ugandan government now, is being absolutely blasted by governments, by the UN, by world leaders, and Uganda is being labeled now as a country full of haters, a backward country, a country full of bigots, homophobes, and all sorts of things. Now, I'm not so sure that all those accusations are completely wrong, because it sounds to me, from what I gather, the law is exaggerated, and it even imposes the death penalty on certain sexual behavior. But I don't know the details, so I hesitate to get into it. The problem here is, one of the problems here is, in the modern world, we are no longer talking about behavior. That's, if you go back 100 years or back in the age of Charles Lwanga, the question was behavior, whether same-sex behavior, sexual behavior, was allowed or not. And almost everybody in almost every culture and every religion would say, no, that behavior is unacceptable, it's immoral, it's self-destructive. But then in the 20th century, there was a shift from talking about immoral behavior to talking about identity of persons. So no longer talking about homosexual behavior, but talking about homosexual people, and then the term became gay. So gay was no longer just an adjective, he's a gay man, but he's a gay. It became a noun. It became an identity. It became a category of people. And then the question was no longer to make judgments about behavior, which we have to make, but it was about rights and unjust discrimination against a category of people. Okay. And then that movement became, or the tendency became, okay, now we have to identify categories of people that are at threat of being discriminated against. So it became LGBTQIA+, and there's many categories, more than we can list, because anyone who wants to claim a oppression or a discrimination can simply identify himself or herself as a persecuted minority whose rights are being violated, and that's the discussion now. So if that's the discussion, rights and identities, well then the idea of the Ugandans is absurd, because they say you can't make laws against who people are. You can't make laws against who people are and who they love. That's obviously discrimination. I just saw recently the U.S. Embassy to the Vatican posting their pride flag in the Vatican, and they said, because we are inclusive, we do not discriminate against people for who they are or who they love. Well, no one discriminates against people for who they are and who they love. I mean, no one justly does. That is unjust discrimination. That's not really the point. I hope you realize that kind of language is a distraction. It's not about who people are or who they love. It's about what people do. And those laws in Uganda are about behavior. Now, whether they should be civilly penalized for their behavior, that's a difficult question. I even wonder, since you know I'm a chaplain of a support group, Courage, for people who are striving for chastity, people with same-sex attraction striving for chastity, I wonder if Courage would be illegal in Uganda now. I don't know, because that's the danger. If you start pushing in the other direction, then you eliminate the possibility of supporting people in the struggle for chastity. So a homily like this might be illegal in Canada because you're not allowed to talk about immorality, or in the UK or somewhere, I could be put in jail for giving a homily like this. But in Uganda, I might also go to jail because I'm talking about respecting the rights of people, and unjust discrimination is wrong. Now, if you want to understand the right position, the church's approach to this is always to distinguish between persons and their behavior. So people are made in the image and likeness of God. There's no justification for any unjust discrimination of anybody because of who they are. Yes. Behavior, though, is a matter of judgment. I could say, I love you. But if I take your money, it doesn't matter how much I love you. If I take your money, that's wrong behavior. If I post something nasty about you on social media, even if I say I love you, and if I do love you, that's still wrong. So you see the distinction? And the church says homosexual behavior is wrong. It's wrong because it violates the law of God. It's wrong because it's harmful to the family. It's harmful because it's wrong because it's harmful to the very people who do these things. Aside from any civil punishments or whatever Uganda is saying about it, it's wrong. But that's not the same as rejecting or persecuting or discriminating against people. That's not the same. People have a right to their dignity and their freedom as persons. In the case of Uganda and Charles Lwanga, now no one would say that King, whatever his name was, he would not identify himself as LGBT. He had many wives, he had many children, he had many victims of his sexual behavior. He was drunk with power, that's what he was. And those categories that we talk about now, LGBT, they didn't exist in Uganda then. So it's hard to connect that experience of Charles Lwanga and his companions with modern day controversies about gay rights. I think the reason why it is connected is because it gives us an opportunity to see, to sort out the controversy in light of the gospel. To understand that there are two levels of authority here, and God's authority is above human authority. And that human authority can be in the wrong. It's possible for governments to go wrong, both far to the left and far to the right. It's possible for governments to legitimize or legalize things that are blatantly wrong, like same-sex so-called marriages. That's wrong. But it's also possible for governments to enact harsh penalties for categories of people as if they shouldn't exist. That's wrong too. Charles Lwanga and his companions are heroes for upholding the law of God, for recognizing the authority of God, for realizing that life in Christ is worth more than life on this earth. It's better to die without sin than to give in to sin and save your life. That's what Charles Lwanga and his companions tell us. And that's true. So whatever the controversies of the day, and of course the LGBT controversy is really big this month. This is proclaimed as Pride Month. Well, there's a lot of confusion and a lot of well-meaning, misplaced compassion, and there's a lot of scandal. But whatever is going on in the controversy, we can take the position of Charles Lwanga, Saint Charles Lwanga, a young man who knew what was true, who knew God, who knew Jesus Christ, who knew the right priority of values, and who said, some things I just will not do. There's some positions I just will not accept. I won't even engage in a discussion about it. If you have to kill me, so be it. And then I'll reign in glory. And that's what we're celebrating on his feast day. The glory of the martyrs. Not because what was done to them was good, but because how they responded was so good. With faith, with dedication to God, with a refusal to hate, with a purity of heart that is just heroic. So that's what we're celebrating. Peace to Charles Lwanga. Now, I know it's also today, first Saturday, and we're honoring Our Lady. There's no better example of faithfulness to God than the Blessed Virgin Mary. There's no better example, and there's no more powerful intercessor in heaven than the Blessed Virgin Mary. So we turn to her, we honor her immaculate heart, and we ask her to make our hearts like hers so that we can be one with the heart of her Son.